Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. This week's program is entitled Barbarians at the Gate. This idiom, barbarians at the gate, is what we are experiencing in our nation, and it's what we always experience. But sometimes the barbarians are more numerous than at other times. This idiom refers to a righteous culture or people being attacked by unrighteous, lawless thieves, immoral men, marauders, gangs, thugs, rogues, even sodomites and leftists. Now, of course, none is righteous, no, not one. This is a reference to relative righteousness. Those being attacked are generally those who hold to Christian culture. The attackers are the pagans. Barbarians at the gate would refer to historic events such as the Goths sacking Rome, or the Mongol hordes attacking Europe in the 13th century, or the Muslim Ottoman Turks attacking Vienna in 1529, or even Japan bombing Pearl Harbor. Biblically, it would describe events such as Jerusalem under King Hezekiah being attacked by the Assyrians in 700 BC. But the enemies at the gate are not always external. Most often, it's actually internal. Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 26, "For wicked men are found among my people. They watch like fowlers lying in wait. They set a trap. They catch men." Acts chapter 20, verse 30, "And from among your own selves men will arise, speaking perverse things." Like has often been said, if America falls, it will not fall from enemies without, it will fall from enemies within. Just like when southern Israel fell to the Babylonians, it was the Jews inside the city by their corruption and their immorality that actually brought about the barbarian invasion of the city. Russia fell to the Bolsheviks, the Germans to the Nazis, the Italians to the fascists, because the people themselves were corrupt. They were immoral. They were unprincipled. And also, this phrase, barbarian at the gate, isn't just a reference to military conflict. It's mostly a reference to the culture war, where the barbarians want to do away with Christian law and governance and replace it with the immorality of Sodom and Gomorrah, the politics of a totalitarian state, the economics of Marxism, so that leftist ideologues and envious people can live off the system rather than having to work. I mean, this is what this is all about. Wanting moral and economic lawlessness, wanting power. And it should be mentioned that these barbarians at the gate are in various degrees. There are the followers, there are the leaders. There are those who are simply indifferent to the things of God and they vote for the left. And then there are the militant pundits, the political leaders who promote leftism. Even Joe Biden, good old Joe, is one of the barbarians at the gate in that he believes an 8-year-old child can determine his or her own gender and that women should have the right to kill the baby in the womb. But regardless of the degree of involvement, all of the barbarians at the gate hold to the same ideology, and that's why they are the barbarians at the gate. They all believe righteousness is personal moral autonomy. They all reject the law of nature and nature's God. They all believe in Satan's creed, do what thou wilt. And in this claim to human freedom and autonomy from what they perceive is the oppression of God's law, they all believe that they are moral creators for a better world. But they're actually destroyers. They're actually the enemy of the good. What is described in Psalm chapter 2, where all of mankind and all of the kings take their stand and their counsel together against the Lord and against the Messiah, saying, "Let us tear from us God's fetters, and let us tear from us God's cords." They want to break away from the law of God. For them, American freedom is not freedom to serve and obey God, but freedom from God. And, you know, these barbarians at the gate don't have to be rabid atheists, just people who are unprincipled, people who put their own short-term interests, their own financial gains, their own social acceptance above truth. These are the people who are always ripe for a Marxist takeover. These are the unprincipled people spoken of in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 7. If he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, and also 2 Peter 3:17, you therefore, beloved, knowing this beforehand, be on guard so that you are not carried away by the error of unprincipled men and fall from your own steadfastness. The Greek word is athemas, those without law, those who operate on self rather than the law of God. So in short, there are many barbarians at the gate who have arisen. From a human perspective, they are strong. This is what we're up against. So what I'd like to cover are three biblical stories regarding barbarians at the gate. And the timeless lessons that God teaches us through these biblical stories. I mean, this is why these events are recorded in Scripture. 860 BC, the attack of the Moabites and the Ammonites against Israel under King Jehoshaphat. 700 BC, the attack of the Assyrians against Israel and King Hezekiah. And 586 BC, the attack of the Babylonians against Israel under King Zedekiah. Throughout Israel's history, God's people have literally had barbarians at the gate. Now, these texts can be applied in many ways. Usually in churches, these battles are applied to our personal battles, our spiritual battles, because our battles are not just military. We find that we're fighting three enemies, the world, our own flesh, and the devil. All three of these are barbarians at the gate. And in our battle against the devil, against our own sinful flesh, we are locked in a spiritual warfare against spiritual forces of wickedness in high places. So we must use against these forces, spiritual weapons, prayer, truth, holiness. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3, for though we walk in the flesh, we're in the physical world, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing that raises up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. The battle is in our thoughts, in the spirit of men. And the barbarian at the gate can be our own lusts, and we have to fight them daily. But in this battle against the world, we are also battling evil people. In courts, in debates, in arguments, we are battling for the hearts and the souls of men, battling the lies and the propaganda of this world. And the government is actually tasked with the job of picking up weapons against these people. But until we're called to do that, our battle is a communication battle. I believe many Christians misunderstand what Paul was saying in Ephesians chapter 6 when he wrote that our battle is not against flesh and blood. What Paul was saying is that Christians do not kill people with the sword. Our battle is a spiritual battle. But in that spiritual battle, we do battle with real people. There are barbarians at the gate that we need to refute and seek to convert. So these biblical examples in the Kings and in the Chronicles have many applications, spiritual warfare, personal warfare, even military conflict among nations. But the lesson is clear that just like in ancient Israel, the enemy is always attacking. Our Christian life is one continual battle. We can never say in this world that we have won the battle and we can sit down and rest. We're Christian soldiers, and we must continually fight the good fight of faith. So if you want some counsel for the battle, learn from these examples given to us in Scripture as to what to do when the barbarians are at the gate. And the first example is that of King Jehoshaphat. The Moabites and the Ammonites made an alliance together to take out Israel. And Jehoshaphat did not boast that he could win. He realized that he was outnumbered and outgunned. And so we have this famous verse in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 12. O our God, will you not judge them? For we are powerless before this great multitude who are come against us, nor do we know what to do, but our eyes are on you. Have you ever prayed that prayer? It's a prayer of helplessness that God can honor. This week, in regard to, you know, the political war, Rush Limbaugh said, "I still haven't given up on the idea that we are in the majority and all we have to do is find a way to unite and win." Well, I question that assessment because I personally don't see a moral majority in our country like we had years ago. We might have some supporters of Republicanism and Trump out of economic considerations or out of traditionalism, but true Christians, not so many. But that doesn't matter, because our victory is not contingent upon our numbers or upon our strength, but upon God's power. And that's the way it has always been. So God caused the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites to fight each other. 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 17. "You need not fight this battle. Station yourselves. Stand and see the salvation of the Lord on your behalf. O Judah and Jerusalem, do not fear or be dismayed. Tomorrow go out and face them, for the Lord is with you." And in verse 23, "For the sons of Ammon and the Moabites rose up against the inhabitants of Mount Seir, destroying them completely. And when they had finished with the inhabitants of Seir, they helped to destroy one another." And this is how God often destroys evil. He lets evil destroy evil. Evil people will often implode under their own weight. So as time went by, the barbarians were again at the gates of Jerusalem. Again, Israel was powerless, and God had to supernaturally intervene. One thing we do notice in Israel's history as it progressed, and as the Jews departed more and more from God, the attack of the barbarians became worse and worse. The situation for Hezekiah was far worse than that of Jehoshaphat. Even before the Assyrians surrounded the capital city of Jerusalem, the Assyrians pretty much wiped out every other city in southern Israel. So we learn from this that winning the battle doesn't always mean that we will not experience casualties and loss. The Assyrians eventually put up a siege around Jerusalem. So Hezekiah and the people prayed. 2 Kings chapter 19, verse 19. "Now, O Lord, our God, I pray, deliver us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you alone, O Lord, are God." And in verse 35, "Then it happened that night that the angel of the Lord went out and struck 185,000 in the camp of the Assyrians. And when men arose in the morning, behold, all of them were dead." Don't underestimate God's power to stop the wicked in their tracks immediately. The sentence of death is still upon the heads of the unsaved. At any moment, God can take their life. As in Acts chapter 12, King Herod, who put to death James, he was a barbarian at the gate of Christendom, but God struck him dead with disease. Consider also President William Henry Harrison, the president who had the shortest term, 31 days. He picked up a cold during his inauguration speech in winter, and that did him in. Interestingly enough, you know, Harrison's whole campaign was built upon a lie that he was this great war hero when he wasn't. Well, the final siege on Jerusalem by the barbarians was the Babylonian siege during the days of King Zedekiah, the final king in Israel's history. And here Jerusalem lost. The Jews had to surrender to the barbarians at the gate. God did not deliver Jerusalem. Jeremiah chapter 38, verse 17. Then Jeremiah said to Zedekiah the king, "Thus saith the Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel, if you will indeed go out to the officers of the king of Babylon, then you will live. This city will not be burned with fire, and you and your household will survive. But if you will not go out to the officers of the king of Babylon, then the city will be given over to the hands of the Chaldeans, and they will burn it with fire, and you yourself will not escape from their hand." The Jews thought at this time that God would certainly deliver them in the end, like he did in the case of Jehoshaphat and Hezekiah. The prevailing theology of this day was that Israel was invincible, that God's promise was that Israel could never be invaded. So how do we apply this biblical example to Christian victory today? Does this mean that sometimes we don't win? No, actually, in Christ we always win. But the lesson in this case is that even though the city of man, the nation, is destroyed, the people of God can still win. Jeremiah was saved from the enemy at the gate. The enemy at the gate judged the enemies of God within the gate, the ungodly Israelis at this time. The battle was won not by God saving the political system of Israel, but by God bringing the system to an end. God saved his people out of the system and from the system. God's people still won. And Jeremiah makes this tremendous statement concerning our battle for the Lord. Jeremiah chapter 20, verse 11. But the Lord is with me like a dreaded champion. Therefore, my persecutors will stumble and not prevail. They will be utterly ashamed because they have failed, with an everlasting disgrace that will not be forgotten. Notice the Lord was with the true people of God like a dreaded champion, even though the nation was lost to the Babylonians. Having a dreaded champion is like your enemy having to fight an invincible enemy on your side, like a Goliath, like a Superman, like a Thor. The enemy shakes in fear when they realize who you have on your side. So God's people won against the barbarians at the gate, even in this final battle. Now let's talk about the election. This political battle, which is just one small part of the larger battle. The election story is just another example of enemies at the gate. And we can draw from all of the lessons learned in those historic, biblical, ancient battles of Israel. And I hope you come to see that the key people fighting for election integrity are evangelical Christians at the federal and the local levels. Jenna Ellis and Sidney Powell and Ted Cruz and many others. Now, of course, the Never Trumpers claim that these Christians have been deceived by Donald Trump. But it's more likely that these Christians have seen the corruption in the election system and are willing to sacrifice everything to stop it. So just for a moment, imagine what America would look like if Christians were removed. Overnight, America would become a dystopian, immoral, totalitarian state. Every possible evil would be legalized, promoted. All righteousness would be punished. But Christians hold this all back because we are the salt and the light of the nation. The Christians speaking up hold back the great apostasy. Remember the movie, especially this time of year, It's a Wonderful Life? What Potterville looked like if James Bailey had never been born? Or even Back to the Future? You know, what happened to Hill Valley if Biff was in control? So here is where the election battle stands. Last week, the Supreme Court turned down the Texas case against Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Georgia, which claimed that those four swing states unconstitutionally violated election law, which disenfranchised Texas from a fair election for president. The Supreme Court should have taken this case, but for various reasons, bad reasons, it did not. But nevertheless, this might actually work out for good. Because if the election is overturned, it has to be overturned on the basis of ballot fraud, not legal technicalities. Now, the violation of constitutional election law in these states is not a legal technicality, but this is what the left will say. The Democrats put the importance of accepting every single vote above whether the legislators or the state election boards follow the law. So if this election is overturned on the basis of legal procedure, the left is going to riot in the streets. But if the election is overturned on the basis of actual ballot fraud, and piles of fake ballots are presented to the media as evidence, the left is still going to riot, but not so much, and not with any moral authority. Actual evidence of fraud is going to be a real problem for the Democrats. And this is why we should expect that those who are involved in election fraud are doing everything they can to cover their tracks. So in this regard, there are these stories. First, the ballots in Georgia. 9 poll workers in Georgia have affidavits claiming that they saw fake ballots. It took a long time to find the details of this story because you're not going to find it on any mainstream news media sites. And so this is from the Georgia Republican Party. Quote, "The lack of creases is strange considering that mail-in ballots have to be folded to fit into an envelope. Some of the witnesses said the perfect markings, all in black and never outside the voting bubble, appear as though they were printed by a machine or stamped. Everything was in total disarray." Susan Voiles, a poll manager with 20 years of experience handling ballots, wrote in her affidavit about her experience at a recount center in Fulton County. Voiles said that ballots usually show signs of handling, like written marks, creases, torn edges. But a batch she counted while working as a recount auditor at the Georgia World Congress Center on November 14th stood out. It was pristine. There was a difference in the texture of the paper. It was as if they were intended for absentee use, but had not been used for that purpose. There were no markings on the ballots to show where they had come from or where they had been processed. I observed that the markings for the candidates on these ballots were unusually uniform, perhaps even with a ballot marking device. By my estimate, in observing these ballots, approximately 98% constituted votes for Joe Biden. Carlos Silva, a registered Democrat, observed a batch of ballots similar to the ones described by Voiles, this time in DeKalb County. "I noticed they all had perfect black bubbles, and they were all Biden selected. I heard them go through the stack and call out Biden's name over 500 times in a row." Robin Hall witnessed the same odd ballots in Fulton County. "The ballots appeared to be perfectly filled out as though they were pre-printed with the presidential candidate selected. They did not look like a person filled out this at home." Deborah Fisher witnessed the same pattern with military and overseas ballots. She noticed the watermarks on the ballots were printed in solid gray instead of being transparent like other ballots. Fisher suspected the ballots were counterfeit and inquired with election directors, who told her it was not an issue due to the use of different printers. "I noticed that almost all the ballots I reviewed from the military were for Biden. Many batches went 100% for Biden. I believe the military ballots are highly suspicious of fraud." See, this is what the Trump team needs. They need to find and present physical evidence of fake ballots. If these ballots are uncovered as evidence, then pretty much Trump wins in the court of public opinion and in legal courts. Affidavits are not enough. People can claim anything. It needs to be backed up with tangible evidence. And from what I've read, it doesn't matter if the elections have been certified by the states, or if the electors have voted, or if Congress votes in January, fraud overturns everything. And then the Supreme Court has to decide on a remedy. And that remedy, according to the Constitution, would be for the House of Representatives to choose the next president. The next story of real tangible evidence is Trump's team auditing Dominion voting machines in Michigan. 2 weeks ago, the Trump team got access to Atrium County in Michigan voting machines. Here's the story, quote, "President Donald Trump's legal team is examining and taking images from 22 voting tabulators in Atrium County after a judge issued an order later Friday. A judge actually granted our team access for us to conduct a forensic audit," Trump attorney Jenna Ellis told Fox News on Sunday. "Atrium County is solidly Republican, but its unofficial results initially showed Democrat Joe Biden winning more votes on November 3rd than Trump did. The results were soon corrected, and county and state officials have said the initial reported inaccuracies were due to programming errors by a Republican clerk and not due to errors by Dominion voting systems or related software. So this is the case where the cheaters made a mistake. giving Biden a win in a solid Republican county. And that brought up red flags. And so that suspicion caused a recount, and it was discovered that 6,000 votes were switched from Trump to Biden. The Democrats say this was human error. Republican investigators say human error doesn't switch 6,000 votes. This is in the software. So the audit has been completed, and on Monday of this week, a judge allowed the release of the audit. Here's the story. A judge is expected to hold a hearing Monday morning on a lawyer's request to lift a protective order shielding the result of the court-ordered examination of voting equipment in Atrium County, a county that President Donald Trump easily won, but where his legal team is alleging irregularities. Attorney Matthew DiPerno filed an emergency motion Friday with the 13th Circuit judge, claiming he has received initial preliminary results of the audit, which are important for the public, the U.S. government, and the Michigan legislature to review and understand, and are an issue of national security. Michigan state attorney and Michigan's head of elections are both Democrat. And both of them tried to keep these results from the public through the courts. But these audit's results were revealed, and they're going to be a real game changer for the Trump case, because if it can be proven that the Dominion voting machines cheated in this Michigan county, then it's likely they cheated in all the other 47 Michigan counties and even in the other swing states. And besides, the media, if this is revealed, is going to have some serious egg on their face, because for the last 6 weeks, they have been denying election fraud, and even YouTube saying it's going to take down any video that claims election fraud. So here are the results from the auditing of the Dominion voting machines. The report opens by stating, "We conclude that Dominion voting systems is intentionally and purposefully designed with inherent errors to create systemic fraud and influence election results. The system intentionally generates an enormously high number of ballot errors. The electronic ballots are then transferred for adjudication. The intentional errors lead to bulk adjudication of ballots with no oversight, no transparency, and no audit trail. This leads to voter or election fraud. Based on our study, we conclude that Dominion voting systems should not be used in Michigan. We further conclude that the results of Atrium County should not have been certified." So the short of this is that when these ballots are scanned, a certain percentage of ballots cannot be read by the machine. That always happens. So they're sent to a human operator to determine what the ballot should actually read. And this is called transferring the ballots for adjudication. Well, the surprise is that 68% of all ballots scanned were transferred for adjudication to someone, a human operator, who can manipulate the ballots in any way he chooses. A blank ballot can be scanned multiple times, and votes can be built up for a candidate, the candidate of the operator's choice. And there are no records of the operator's adjudication of the ballots. You would think that there would be an audit trail where such and such an election official fixed such and such ballots, but there's nothing there. So it's no wonder that Dominion voting systems was rejected in Texas. There's no security. Here's a little video from the auditors addressing the problem.
There is nothing voted on this ballot. Mm-hmm. Everybody agree? Mm-hmm. It's a 100% blank ballot. Mm-hmm. And I can tell it to scan and adjudicate all ballots. I can go and vote that blank ballot.
Oh, wow. Shows. Misty, can you scan a ballot more than once?
I've just done it. I just scanned the same batches that y'all just voted. Mm-hmm. I never got any more until that one.
I don't know why they approved such a system. Don't get it.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to do blank ballots. So let's see if it does the blank ballots like it's supposed to. Let's see. It scanned it. I'm going to accept it into the system. And now let's see if it goes over for adjudication. Okay, it sent it to adjudication. And there's my batch, my blank ballot that I want to adjudicate. And I'm going to vote for Doug Collins. I'm going to vote for Bubba. And I am going to complete it. And I just counted that vote. Say that one more time.
I said it works fine for honest people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those who intend to do wrong, though, certainly can.
That's right.
So you see the problem. And always remember, if people can cheat, they will cheat. Don't believe those who say, well, bad actors could cheat, but nobody cheated. If the machines allowed for cheating, regardless of any evidence, the election cannot be certified. Here are some other elements in the report. The allowable election error rate established by the Federal Election Commission guidelines is 1 in 250,000. That's 0.0008%. We observe the error rate in Dominion machines as being 68.05%. This demonstrates a significantly fatal error in security and election integrity. Do you think? The report also states that the Atrium County Clerk and Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson have stated that the election night error detailed above by the vote flip from Trump to Biden was the result of human error caused by the failure to update the tabulator prior to the election night for the down ballot race. We disagree and conclude that the vote flip occurred because of machine error built into the voting software designed to create the error. Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson's statement on November 6, 2020, that the correct results always were and continued to be reflected on the tabulator total tape was false. Then the report goes on to show another smoking gun, that this high number of ballots sent to adjudication did not happen in previous elections. Quote, a staggering number of votes required adjudication. This was a 2020 issue not seen in previous election cycles still stored on the server. This is caused by intentional errors in the system. The intentional errors led to bulk adjudication of ballots with no oversight, no transparency, or audit trail. Our examination of the server logs indicate that this high error rate was incongruent with patterns from previous years. The statement attributes these issues to human errors is not consistent with the forensic evaluation, which points more correctly to a systematic machine or software error. The systematic errors are intentionally designed to create errors in order to push a high volume of ballots to bulk adjudication. And guess what? All of the records of the machine from previous years are available, but the 2020 records were erased. Quote, significantly, the computer system shows vote adjudication logs for prior years, but all adjudication log entries for the 2020 election cycle are missing. The adjudication process is the simplest way to manually manipulate votes. The lack of records prevents any form of audit accountability, and their conspicuous absence is extremely suspicious since the files existed for previous years using the same software. Removal of these files violates state law and prevents a meaningful audit even if the secretary wanted to conduct an audit. We must conclude that the 2020 election cycle records have been manually removed. The conclusion? There is no way this election management system could have passed tests or have been legally certified to conduct the 2020 elections in Michigan under current law. According to the National Confederation of State Legislatures, Michigan requires full compliance with federal standards as determined by a federally accredited voted system laboratory. So, what do you think this response was from all of the state officials in Michigan? all of the Democrat state officials. They all disputed the claims of the audit. They questioned the motives and the expertise of the audit company. This response by these Democrat officials is very suspicious, because any reasonable person would at least say, you know, this is pretty shocking. If it's true, this overturns the election. To make sure, let's bring in another audit team and do a second check. But none of these officials are asking for a second audit. They're just criticizing the first audit. And did you hear about any of this audit in the mainstream news? Nothing. And yet we know if the shoe was on the other foot and Biden lost, this would be the lead story in every network. Headlines: cybersecurity team discovers Michigan voting machines had audit trail erased. Michigan audit machines cheated. Michigan voting machines are wrong 68% of the time. But the media is doing to this story what they did to the Hunter Biden story before the election, burying it to ensure the election of a Democratic presidential candidate. On Monday, the very day this audit in Michigan came out saying that the election cannot be certified, the electors voted and Biden gave his victory speech claiming that the election was fair and settled. Quote from Biden: "In this battle for the soul of America, democracy prevailed, faith in our institutions held, and the integrity of our election remains intact." But Biden left off all of the evidence of election fraud. He quoted only those people who claimed that the election was legitimate. And if the media treated Biden as they treated Trump, the headlines would have been, "Biden makes baseless claims that election results are genuine. Biden denies reports of fraud. Biden refuses to consider election irregularities." And Biden said that he won by 7 million votes, which makes it sound as if who can dispute that? But Biden only won by 80,000 votes in Pennsylvania, 10,000 votes in Georgia, 150,000 votes in Michigan, 20,000 votes in Wisconsin, and 10,000 votes in Arizona. Remember, it doesn't take widespread election fraud for the election to be invalid. All it takes is targeted election fraud in these key battleground states. So this week, Mitch McConnell, head of the Senate, Republican, congratulated Biden for his victory, legitimizing the election results, and that was disappointing. We also have many conservative commentators, people like Ben Shapiro, The Daily Wire, Fox News, saying that Biden won. Now, commentators like Rush Limbaugh are holding firm to the illegitimacy of this election, but many other conservative commentators aren't. David French, he writes a piece called The Dangerous Idolatry of Trumpism. Quote, "A significant segment of the Christian public has fallen for conspiracy theories, has mixed nationalism with the Christian gospel, has substituted a bizarre mysticism for reason and evidence, and rages in fear and anger against their political opponents, all in the name of preserving Donald Trump's power." Then French goes on to characterize opposition to the election as being a fantasy. Another Christian commentator, Eric Erickson, tweets out, "If you A, call yourself a Christian, and B, Joe Biden is elected today, and C, you conclude that it is other than God's will, then you are either not a Christian or you do not understand the faith you claim to possess." But Erickson's, you know, Romans 13 argument here of submitting to authority is irrelevant. Christians can investigate the legitimacy of an election and still submit to powers that are ordained of God. Erickson also wrote an editorial this week. "Nine justices rejected the remedy Texas sought, and a bunch of conservative congressmen, attorney generals, and talking heads assured conservatives the case has merits and the Supreme Court would take it. It never had merit. It was obvious the court would reject it. However, a bunch of conservative media chose to give it legitimacy. I am truly disappointed with my own side for its hucksterism, lies, and denial of reality. Too many friends have no knowledge that they're wet. They cannot appreciate the real world around them and live now in a fantasy land of grievance, theft of elections, and mythology. Principles have been abandoned, and all that remains is coveting power and keeping power. Some good friends have even signed a letter wanting multiple states to ignore their voters and appoint replacement electors to the Electoral College. It's disappointing to see. I just assumed my side was better than the left, which spent the last 4 years lying about 2016, engaging in petty grievances, and screaming about stolen elections in Russia. Turns out in the end, everybody sometimes disappoints. Lord knows a lot of you are disappointed in me for merely trying to tell you the truth. So Erickson sounds kind of righteous here, but what if he's wrong? At the very least, how does he know for sure there was no election cheating? And how does he know for sure that the media is not covering up the truth like it always does? Now, I've thought really long and hard about the claims on each side of this debate, and I'm sure you have too. But here are my thoughts. Most of these conservative commentators, and even some Republican politicians, are all agreeing with the election results because they all happen to start off with an a priori dislike for Donald Trump. They've all said in the past that conservatism would be a whole lot better off without Donald Trump. And don't forget, many Republicans and conservative commentators disliked Ronald Reagan. And I remember those days. And the second reason I believe these people are going along with the reported election results is that they really don't believe that there can be this level of corruption in the system, where Democrat operators would cheat to this degree. So where you fall in these election results comes down to what you know and believe about man's sin. Someone like Rudy Giuliani, who is a prosecutor for years, knows all about how Democrats in these cities can lie and steal and cheat. But other people are not so informed. Remember during the Russian collusion hoax? Half of the Republican Party believed that there might be something to the story. They couldn't believe that the FBI, the Department of Justice, the media, and so many Democrats could fabricate such a lie. But they actually did. The majority media opinion does actually even have an influence upon Republican legislators. Because it's hard to stand up against a lie when the majority believes it, and when it's being reported every day in the news. You know, that old story of Hans Christian Andersen about the king who has no clothing is more true than people like to admit. So I start off with the assumption that there was serious election fraud. And the cover-up and the mocking of those who are bringing out the election fraud is part of the fraud. When the Dominion head of strategy and security is caught on tape saying before the election that we're making effing sure that Trump is not going to win, and when China owns Dominion voting machines, and when a forensic audit finds that the logs have been erased for this election, and that there are over 1,000 affidavits of eyewitness accounts of election fraud, you have to fall on the side that this election was stolen, until facts prove otherwise. These people on the left will lie if they think they can get away with it. They will even kill their own baby in the womb. So you think they won't lie in an election? How gullible and naive can we be? Everyone knew about Epstein's underage girls and his parties, but the elites kept silent about it. And the Hunter Biden story is now coming out. And as Trump just recently said, Joe Biden lied on the debate stage. He knew exactly what his son was doing, and the emails prove it. We are in bad times. The barbarians are not just outside the gate. They're in places, in power, in our country. They are in our election. 2 Timothy chapter 3, but realize this. In the last days, difficult times will come. Men will be lovers of themselves. Lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of the good. But nevertheless, the good news is that we will prevail. Every biblical principle in the Old Testament Chronicles and in the Kings regarding God's victory over the barbarians at the gate still apply. 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 12. O our God, will you not judge them? For we are powerless before this great multitude that has come against us, nor do we know what to do, but our eyes are upon you. God will grant his people success in this battle to expose and take down evil. Thank you for including God and country as one small part of your discipleship in the Word. Don't forget to subscribe, to like, to share, to leave a comment below. Keep the faith, keep the Word, be in the fellowship, and may Jesus Christ reign.